Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Real quick before we get started, we have something really cool we want to tell you about.
Kieran Yonner, the artist of Drenith Magistrate and one of my favorite commanders of all time, Kenrith the Return King, has a playmat Kickstarter that's going on right now.
Each piece features extended art to fit the dimensions of the playmat, which really adds to the atmosphere of the characters like Professor Onyx.
This campaign also features casual commander favorites like Queen Marchesa and Teferi's Protection, but also includes the fun holiday cards like Bog, Humbugs, and Top Deck the Halls.
The Kickstarter is wrapping up this weekend, so make sure to use our link in the description below to grab these limited edition playmats before it's too late.
Now, let's get on with the show.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan, and this week we're talking about what's going on with Commander.
Oh my God.
For the second week in a row, third week maybe.
Basically the third week in a row. Yeah. We had two Mondays smack in a row with huge news. We are now recording this on the Friday after we received the latest update.
To be honest, there was a Monday in between when we're recording this right now and when it's releasing, so you should probably interject now. With whatever big fucking freak thing happened here.
The reserve list got banned.
But what has happened is kind of, honestly, I mean, in some ways, kind of bad. The rules committee has given ownership of Commander to Wizards, basically. Commander was owned by, or not owned by, run by a
basically
bunch of...
Basically owned by, yeah.
Run by volunteers, more or less. People that just did this because they were fun. They weren't getting paid. They just did this for the fun of the community. After these bans, there were horrifying death threats, which is really disturbing, on this rules committee. And they basically communicated with Wizards and gave ownership of this rules committee to Wizards, the owner of Magic the Gathering.
Exactly, yeah. So it's not really what anyone wanted. I don't think this is what Wizards really wanted either.
Yeah, they kind of actually made that clear, that they were happy that Wizards was its own community-run format. No, they were happy that Commander was its own community-run format. So many words I'm trying to say right now.
Well, because there's so much in our fucking brains that's going on.
So they didn't really want this, but I don't fault the rules committee at all. They had to do this. I mean, like, what are you going to do? You're getting, like, threats. There's no reason to continue a volunteer project when you're
over
getting threats.
Over a fucking game, for crying out loud.
That doesn't make any sense. But it happened. Wizards has control. We're going to talk about what that could mean, some hypothesizing, what they've said already it means. They had a what's it called? Their weekly MTG, where they stream and they talked with Gavin and Aaron Forsyth, talking about what that means for the future. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So that kind of summarizes everything that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that the main point here is, yes, Wizards of the Coast has taken over the Commander format. What does this mean? And they were really good about bringing, like you said, Aaron Forsyth and Gavin Verhey on their Monday Magic stream, which I think was very necessary, I will say.
It did make me feel a little bit better, to be honest. Gavin clearly has a true love of the game. We've never interacted with Gavin, but just from what I've seen, he seems like he really loves the game, and having him in charge makes me feel much better, for sure.
Yeah, and I know Aaron Forsyth also has the game's best interest in mind, too.
Like a competitive player, which is good for us.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Great.
Yeah. So the two of them I trust a ton.
Yeah.
I really liked what they had to say about everything. So I think we should get into some of the main points that they want to talk about here, which the first thing that I think we should talk about is that they're not going to change the ban list right away just because they have control over the format.
Yeah.
Now.
They specifically said that they weren't going to be banning anything new. They said that specifically, but they did say they were looking at the ban list. And to me, it sort of implied things would be coming off because they didn't specify that things won't be coming off. Does that make sense? They said they're not banning any new cards, but we're looking at the ban list. So to me, that says
something might come off. Because looking at the ban list just means we're reevaluating where the direction that we want it to go. I also don't think this means that you should speculate on Mana Crypt and Dockside Extortionist. Because
I really hope they don't unban those cards now. That would be bad.
So foolish of them.
Yeah, because I think that just lets the threateners feel that they've won if they unban these cards.
Like, and that's opens the door to allowing that behavior to continue in the future.
Yeah, that's not good. Could some things come off the ban list? Sure. Maybe theoretically the ban list doesn't make a lot of sense. That's kind of why Commander is fun. So yeah, it might change around a little bit. I don't think they're going to make any changes that will drastically alter the way that Commander is played.
No, no. If anything, it'll be like the cards that people will make fun of that are on the ban list already, or they say that they don't need to be on the ban list. Like, I guess Biorhythm, maybe. Maybe there's some decks that get completely shut off by Biorhythm, but I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more cards in, like, those kind of categories as opposed to taking a look at fast mana and, like, degenerate combo pieces.
And they did mention that, like, they're not looking to ban cards like they do in other formats. Like, one of the good thing about this changeover, I think, is that Wizards has a lot of experience with competitive formats. They've done that before. They've done it for a long time. And you may say, like, oh, the formats suck or whatever. But, like, Magic has been around for 30 years, longer than any other card game. It's, like, from what I'm seeing, one of the most successful card games that exists. So they know how to do competitive card games, so I think that's a good thing. But they're not going to be treating Commander the same way. They said they're not going to be keeping up with the same BNR structure that they do with the other formats. They're not banning stuff once a year. They're not doing that. They said they were looking at, like, maybe quarterly updates just to communicate, but I don't think they're looking to, you know, regulate the format as a competitive format now. That's not what's going on.
Which in essence is exactly what the RC was doing, was they weren't, like, banning cards strictly based on power level or the amount that they were seeing play in the format. If so, Sol Ring would have been on the ban list for a long time. They just kind of want to keep things in line because they understand that Commander players don't want the format to change a ton. Whereas, like, there's a lot of 60 card players that, you know, do like the change in their format and don't have necessarily the same level of attachment to their decks that some Commander players do. I mean, I guess there are, I don't want to say that, like, this is coming from Jun Guy. I'm in my Tarmogoyf shirt today, yeah. Even. Like, I know what it's like to have a connection to a 60 card deck, but I also know what the Commander community is like with having connections to their deck. And I would have to say, from my experiences, I feel like that it's a lot stronger on the Commander side.
People are more connected.
More connected to their dance. So I can understand why they kind of want to keep the status quo and not really treat this like a 60 card format.
One of Commander's strengths is the stability, which is kind of frustrating why these last couple weeks have happened, because in one week the rules committee banned four cards seemingly, like, kind of out of nowhere. Some of Nadu and Doc said maybe not so much, but, like, with the specific intent to, like, to make a
statement.
They even said those words, I think, like, we're doing this to make a statement. So from doing to that to then relinquishing control to Wizards right away in a week feels very out of character for Commander. So I'm hoping that Wizards, like, understands that, like, don't look at the last week. Do what we've been doing for the last 13 years
exactly.
And keep that stability more.
It's
that's,
like,
the strength of
Commander.
It's
like when you're looking at the stock market. Don't look at how good something's been in the week. You have to look at it on the 10-year scale.
Another thing that I'm excited about is they mentioned that they're going to have, like, basically a committee, like their own assortment of people.
Ooh, yes.
And they're going to have a CDH person on there, someone specifically with that in mind, which for us is great because that was one of the issues I think that a lot of people had, is there was no CDH person on the rules committee whatsoever.
No taxation without representation.
I'm not smart enough to understand if that's relevant, but maybe it is. Gavin basically said, not basically, he did say there will be a CDH person on the committee. So to me, that's super exciting.
I think that's just helpful for the direction of the format. The previous CAG didn't really have a fully dedicated CEDH person in the community, which it is fine because that's not the entirety of what Commander is, but I think that the acknowledgement, like having CEDH get brought up multiple times in this announcement, was just, like, kind of not gratifying. What's the word I'm looking for?
Nice to see that it is acknowledged.
Yeah.
Whatever that word is. Nice to see that something that you are interested in is acknowledged.
Maybe
there's got to be a French word for that.
Maybe I'll put it on the bottom of the screen if I remember what the word is.
I also want to specifically say that Aaron said he wants to allow for CDH, which is basically what we're saying. And I think that's really cool that someone at Wizards wants to allow for CDH. That's really awesome to me. But he did specify that a bulk of the decisions would still be made for casual players, which I also think is good.
Exactly. I like that Commander is the Super Smash Brothers of Magic, where you get to have this casual part of the game also have a competitive side to it. So I really like that you have that level of how they work together.
Should we talk about the brackets? I feel like the brackets is, like, the biggest news
thing. The bracket is kind of the biggest thing now, yeah. So there's four different brackets that we're starting off with. I think that's also important to say.
And this is very much a starting off points. I think Gavin specifically said, nothing's in stone right now. This is just an idea.
Here's just someone's idea that they're going to jump with. So basically, each bracket kind of defines the levels of Commander, whereas like instead of saying, on a scale from 1 to 10, my deck's a 7, they're going to be able to put cards into these brackets specifically and say,
if you're playing Vampiric Tutor, that is a bucket 1 deck, or bucket 4, whichever is the strongest
end. They're brackets.
They're brackets. Bracket 4.
You wrote bucket up and down
they
the
They said
document.
Bucket in the thing. They,
Did
you were,
they say
They were
bucket?
Using different words throughout their announcement, which is why every time they were, I just wrote down the word that they said and just
that's
changed the
so
word.
That's so funny.
They said tier, bucket,
great.
Bracket. I'm like, unless my brain just made that up, but I remember that thinking, why they're calling it different stuff.
That is funny, yeah. I mean, they also said they haven't landed on a name either, so I guess they could be whatever we want them to be.
And it was kind of implied that it wasn't going to be directly power related. So like, it was kind of said that Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation together, that would be in bracket 4, which for right now, bracket 4 is the strongest bracket, whatever, okay? So they said those cards together would be in bracket 4, which to me kind of implies that if you're playing Thassa's Oracle in your Merfolk deck, that's fine, which I think is good and cool.
I like that idea of like Thassa's Oracle without a combo piece is like a bracket 1 card or something.
Right, but then what happens, like, is Leveler, like is Thassa's Oracle with Leveler a bracket 3 then? Do you know what I mean? Because that's not really a CDH combo, but it is still 7 mana to win the game with 2 cards.
I feel like Leveler in general becomes like a high bracket card because there's also, you know, the Beamtown Bullies deck that lets you reanimate a creature from your graveyard into someone else's play.
Yes.
So you just Leveler one player out of the game. So like, I feel like the Leveler itself like makes your deck at least bracket 3 or something.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. They also, there were specific things like Swords to Plowshare, Sol Ring, Fetch Lands. Those were all going to be in bracket 1. Although those cards are all extremely powerful, Sol Ring in particular, because of just how the format is and they're not looking to change anything, all decks can play those without pushing them to a new bracket.
Commander staples is what they kind of defined it as, which I think makes sense. Like cards that you're going to see consistently in Commander Precons, your Beast Withins and stuff like that, these are all going to be in your bracket 1, which I think makes a lot of sense.
But I'm curious about stuff like Cyclonic Rift. Does that go up to bracket 2? To me, I don't play that in any of my casual decks, so that would be a bracket 4 card, even though it doesn't see a ton of CDH play either. It's just like the type of card that it is.
That's your thing. I feel like they'll be able to change the brackets that cards are in. Whereas even if cards aren't getting banned, the quarterly updates could still say, hey, bracket 3 is going to include Cyclonic Rift now, as opposed to it being in bracket 2 because we just found that it doesn't jive with the level of the rest of the bracket 2 cards.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's just also like there's a lot of cards. There's just an
there's
enormous
a lot of cards,
amount
yeah.
of cards.
And Aaron did specifically say that bracket 1 and 2 isn't just going to have like
every
all
card.
The rest of cards,
yeah.
right? I think it's going to be more like if you're playing in bracket 1, you can't use the cards in bracket 2, 3, and 4. But I don't even want to say that because they also wanted to make it clear that it's not a ban list. It's a jumping off point into your rule zero conversation, which I think is the most important part of this.
Yeah.
And I think it's the only reason why I like brackets is because it helps tables reach that critical discussion.
I think my favorite things about it is the 10 system doesn't fucking work because Gavin said specifically, no one says their deck is a 1, 2, 3, or 4. No one's deck is a 1, 2, 3, or 4. Those numbers might as well don't exist, right? So I think that's good. And having an even number of tiers means that no one can just say, my deck's a 3, and then we're at the 7 problem all over again. It means that you have to choose a side, a little bit stronger or a little bit weaker. So I think that's good too. It's just a good jumping off conversation for the Rule Zero. It helps fuel that Rule Zero conversation. The Rule Zero conversation still happens. So I think that's good. But something that like my big takeaway from it as a competitive player is, to me, this just means that now there's going to be 4 CEDHs. Like now for each bracket, there's going to be a strongest thing that you can do in each bracket. And also each bracket is going to be defined for us more from the cards that are in the cards above it, the brackets above it. Does that make sense? So like
yes.
For me, like a bracket 3 exists only because the cards in bracket 4 aren't allowed in it. It's defined by the cards in front of it.
I think that that's technically correct.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's going to necessarily play out that way. Like, you can have, like, a CEDH within each other bracket.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of the brackets. Like, part of your Rule Zero conversations a lot of the times I think are going to be, hey, my deck is like mostly in bracket 2, but I play Ancient Tomb and I play Chrome Mox because I have a Chrome Mox or something, right? So I think that's how more of your bracket conversations are going to go instead of saying like, oh, we're playing CEDH bracket 3 or something like that.
Casual players on the whole will interpret it like that.
Yeah.
I think CDH players are going to look at it as an opportunity to go, well, what's the strongest thing I can do in bracket two?
I guess.
They're also going to have a regular CDH deck. But to me, like, I'm just saying because that's how I feel. I know that I see a bracket one, bracket two, bracket three, bracket four. I want the strongest thing I can do in each of those formats.
That's
to me, that's
funny because,
four new metas.
Because I don't care about the brackets. As a CEDH player, like, this whole thing is just mumbo jumbo for me as a CEDH player. Because the only list that I care about is the ban list.
Okay.
So for me, I don't think CEDH should be a bracket because it's its own thing. We're pushing the power level up, and like, you can make multiple metas, but to me, what's fun about casual is that I get to play a commander that I'm going to have fun with.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to play a casual format where like I'm also forced to play within a specific meta, which I guess is CEDH, but if I also like, me personally, if I'm going to power my deck down, I have more interest in playing casual than like some of these other mini CEDH formats. I'd rather just ignore the bracket system.
All or nothing.
Yeah, all or nothing, yeah.
That makes sense. I don't think it's good to make CEDH its own separate bracket, but I do think it'll just exist at the top of bracket four. Like, I think there will still be bracket four decks that are casual decks. For sure, CEDH will just be at the high end of bracket four.
And I almost wonder, though, if that helps muddy the waters between high power and CEDH. Because, like, as you're getting into CEDH, it can be tough, like, distinguishing between your high power casual and CEDH deck and just, like, what is making the difference between the two. I almost feel like it just kind of makes it a little bit more confusing. Like, more people will say, oh, I have a CEDH deck because I have a bracket
tier
four deck.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
I'm playing Vampiric Tutor and I'm playing nine other cards.
Force of Will.
Yeah,
I'm not playing an end the game combo. I'm winning with like Talion damage off of everyone's triggers.
Is that necessarily a bad thing that person realizes, oh, what I'm doing is actually not strong?
I guess no. I guess maybe that is more of a wake-up call then.
I think those things will happen, but I think that will allow players to find CDH more. There's a couple of reasons why this switchover is bad. I don't think I said this time, but you had a roller coaster analogy. I had a music analogy. This is like your favorite punk band gets signed to a major label. Like, yes, more resources are good, but like, at what cost? Is the music going to suck now?
Yeah.
That there's a little bit of a fear. Your roller coaster analogy was kind of funny too.
Yeah, I was, because, you know, earlier this year, Six Flags and Cedar Fair merged, and I feel like it's kind of like that, and there's a lot of uncertainty going on. Are Cedar Fair parks going to get Intamins and RMCs all of a sudden? Or are Six Flags parks only going to get B&Ms and, you know, Vekoma's moving forward and
right.
shit like that?
But for us as content creators, Dylan and Cameron, the people who make content about Magic the Gathering, this is good for us. This is more stuff to talk about. This is more ways to play Magic, more things more interesting metas to fall interest in.
I think it's important to say that Wizards doesn't want this to fail either.
Yes, like, although their plan is to make money, they make money by having happy players, right?
Exactly.
That's how they make money most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like the player base is already kind of like aware of where Wizards kind of oversteps their bounds. I feel like a lot of communities are like that. We're seeing that with the PlayStation and like the PS5 Pro, where like they're putting out a bad console and charging $700 for it for basically the same thing as a PS5.
Are people buying it?
No, a lot of people are angry about it, right? So like, if you can vote with your wallet, there's always going to be MTG whales and like people that love everything WotC's going to put out. But like, you as a player can still vote for your wallet and pick up the products that are going to work for you.
And that also limits the fear of spooky hazards. Bro, which is my fear, is that yes, the people at Wizards are great and they have the best intent in mind for the Commander format, but when their boss's boss says, no, Jewel Lotus makes us money, please put it back in. That's like my deep-seated fear. I don't think that's going to happen as brashly as that, and I think the voting, like I said, the voting with your wallet, not buying products like that, if they do silly shit like that, will send them a real message. But it's a fear. I think people are thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. It's a fear.
It opens the door up to that happening. I think just like having it as a possibility just kind of makes it scary. It doesn't make it happen, but it just makes it scary.
And it's also like just early. It's too early to tell. It's not good to lean into your fear and anxieties about something like this.
That's why we waited a week to put this podcast out, so we didn't like just rush out and talk about like our, you know, unfiltered thoughts about everything.
There's a high potential that this does a lot of good for Commander. The fact that Wizards is fully aware of what cards are coming out in 2 years means that they can have more open communication earlier with Magic players, so they can say, you know, maybe potentially more down the line that things are coming or things could be banned in the future. There are some really good things that I'm looking forward to about it. And like I said, like from a content perspective, it just means like more metagames, more interesting things, more Magic, more stuff to pay attention to, which for me is fun.
That is true. Yeah. It's never bad to have more Magic.
Yeah, I agree.
Before we continue on with like our list here, I don't know if you've seen this quite yet, because this is very fresh from the time of recording, but did you see that thing from the latest episode of the Command Zone podcast talking about this, where Wizards warned the RC about these bans?
I was watching a little bit of it. It wasn't as much of a warning from my interpretation as if they I guess it was a warning. They advised against it. We don't think that you should do this. Wizards kind of heard about these bans and said, like, no, you shouldn't do
this. That's a subcategory of a warning, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree that is a subcategory of warning. And I'm going to kind of agree with them there. I don't think the bans were handled in a super great way. From a gameplay perspective, I'm excited because I like playing Magic and new things are fun.
And I will admit, I do like, on the casual side, the...
It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to have nothing banned for 3 years and then all at once ban 4 cards, 2 of which are staples in every single deck forever. That's not true. Mana Crypt is a staple. And I understand where Wizards is coming from. They said, please don't ban those cards. Yeah.
To me, I feel like that... I don't necessarily want to say that one group or another, that means that someone else will do a better job. This might just be one thing that Wizards had on their finger on the pulse a little bit better. There might be things that the RC had their finger on the pulse of a little bit better than Wizards will have. So, like, it's going to give and take, I think.
As long as Wizards assembles a good crew, what's the term? Committee?
Their committee.
As long as they assemble a good committee, I think we'll still be in good shape. As long as there's good people who are telling their bosses that these are the decisions that we should make, I think that's as best we can ask for. And I have pretty good faith that they'll find the right people.
Yeah, I think so too. And Gavin was talking about how he wants it to be like his Pauper community.
Yeah.
Apparently he has a group of Pauper people. I know he loves Pauper, so if he's going to put that kind of love into this, which I know he loves Commander, you know, I think that's really a really good sign then.
They said that they were going to try to have the buckets ready for Vegas, which as of time of recording, that's in like less than 3 weeks, I think.
Already trying to figure out what cards go in what buckets is such a daunting, pain in the ass sounding task that I wouldn't even like know where to start. I can't believe they think they're going to have something together for Vegas.
It's at least not a
final document.
Certainly not. It would make sense if they did like a first pass. Let's try it out. This is our first rendition of the thing. I have a list that I've kept for a while of just like cards that I purposefully leave out of my casual decks. There are more cards than this, but these are the cards that I think would be automatically in the highest bracket 4. 1, that's the Oracle. That's funny. 2, Imperial Seal, Demonic Tutor, the 1-mana and 2-mana tutors on condition. I think they're too strong. That also means like Vampiric Tutor, Mystical Tutor, Enlightened Tutor, Worldly Tutor, Demonic Consultation, Psychonic Rift, Tainted Pact, Ad Nauseam, Force of Will. To me, those are all the instances. I feel like all of those cards are representatives of just way too strong. Ad Nauseam is too powerful, Force of Will too powerful. The free, unconditional counter magic of Force of Will. Chromox, Mox Diamond, Sol Ring. For me, Sol Ring would be in the highest bracket if we're doing just that. And then Mystic Remora, Underworld Breach, Rhystic Study. Those are all also in the bracket
like
4.
Like CEDH cards that would see play in every single deck that their color is in. Yeah.
Yes, basically. They're only seeing play. Those are the cards that I strictly don't see play in casual because I can't find a good reason to play them in casual besides the fact that they are just generically powerful. And to me, that's the highest bracket. I also have in Fetches, Duels, Gaia's Cradle, and... That's it for the lands. I have the Fetches and Duels. But I don't think, they already said the Fetches are going to be in bracket 1. I don't know where they'll put Duels. Do you think they'll put Duels in bracket 4? Like real Duels like Savannah and Underground Sea?
I think those would all be in bracket 1. I think they'll end up putting them as EDH staples that anyone could play in their
deck.
That
makes sense because some people have been playing for a long time and they still play very casually, but they have a Bayou from when they were 10 years old or whatever. So
and
they still
I also
play it.
Think they want to encourage people that bought Magic 30 to also be able to play like their fake proxy Duels too. So that's another thing that a lot of people are saying too is what's going to happen to proxies now that Wizards is taking
all right,
over the format?
Well, remember that proxy. Let's talk about
cool.
it in a second.
Let me type that.
But
down.
But for the rest of the tier situation, those are the cards that I would have in the highest bracket, bracket 4. In bracket 3, I would include things like Kikijiki combos.
Okay,
I would include things like Wither, Bloom Smog, Chain of Smog combos. I would include other forms of free interaction. So like Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swat and all that kind of stuff too.
Okay, yeah.
Wait, so that's kind of confusing. That means you can still play those cards?
In a tier 3 deck, you're allowed to play
those cards, but you can't play the stuff in tier 4. Because if I say what I think should be only in tier 4, I have already defined what tier 3 is. It's
if
everything that's not those cards.
If you have a tier 4 card in your deck is tier 4.
If you don't, it's tier 3.
Correct. If you play without Force of Will, the tutors, or Rhystic and Mystic and all that jazz, then yeah, your deck is a 3.
If you want to bring your deck to a 2, what I would say is you cut the rest of the free interaction, and all of the three mana or less tutors. Those got to go too. So ooh, even so like
Idyllic Tutor.
Idyllic Tutor, Grim Tutor. I think those, although Idyllic Tutor, there it gets gray because Idyllic Tutor sucks.
Again, but it's not based on power level. It's based on what it does.
Right, yeah. For me, that would be the other line. And then that's really like it. Like combos, fast mana, and free interaction, I think are the 3 points that you like ban on the way down. And then to your bracket one is everything else.
Yeah, I guess the only problem I have with that is that we're now using the terminology ban when that's right, not really not what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just trying to create a guideline for what a Rule Zero conversation is going to be.
And I got to imagine they'll also put things like Expropriate somewhere in there.
Oh, because they did talk about like Armageddon being a tier 4 card where even though that doesn't necessarily CC EDH play, it's still a card that a lot of players don't associate with fun.
And to me, that's lame because I think those cards are fun and really good and powerful. Like a 10 mana spell, that's awesome. You get to take that's two full turns. Let me put my hand down and watch
now
you.
Now
we
have to identify what's objectively fun is, right? And if you don't agree with that, then you don't know what fun is. And now we get, now we get to say that to people. You don't know what fun is.
Wizards decided that's fun.
Yeah,
so
this is fun.
You have to have fun.
I hope you're having fun because all these cards are fun.
Yeah. proxies.
Let's talk about
proxies. Let's get back to proxies.
Yeah.
Proxies is interesting because for most of us who just play kitchen table, it's not going to matter at all. But I know Wizards doesn't love proxies. And if they're pushing the CDH side of things, they're going to be pushing for no proxies on their tournaments and stuff, which makes sense. They're a business.
Right now, Wizards is running zero CEDH tournaments.
That's
though.
True.
So who gives a shit? So you've always been able to do unsanctioned Magic tournaments. There is nothing stopping you from being able to do that.
Right. Do you think Wizards will try to stop that now that it's their format? Do you think they care?
No. I think for CEDH specifically, it's hard for them because they're not involved in the secondary market, which I think is where most of the money in CEDH is.
They're not allowed to say that they're involved
they're
in the market.
They're not allowed to say that they're involved,
they
but they're
are.
Involved in the sense
it's
that they can
there's
still
no way
like,
they're not.
Print jeweled lotuses and stuff.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I'll
they're
give you that.
Aware of how much cards cost.
I know that there are CEDH people at Wizards.
Yeah.
I think that Wizards is aware of how entrenched you have to be in Magic to be a CEDH player. I feel like these players are still going to buy the products that they're coming out with.
That's true. Do you think that they will adjust any of the bans to reflect the fact that Time Twister is impossible for a normal human to buy? Like, do you think that they'll adjust the bracket system or any of the bans when they're saying things coming off or on or anything like that? Do you think they would adjust for reserve list cards? Because if it was their format that they're trying to push, I would say if you want to make more money, make this format affordable for people to join. You can't have reserve list cards that cost hundreds and thousands of dollars just to play the format.
Nobody's forcing you to play those cards.
No, that's true. Yeah.
No
that's
one's
true.
Forcing you to play those cards. And they're not focusing on CEDH
that's
in the way
true.
That they are going to consistently push for CEDH tournaments too, right? Like, even though they acknowledge it, doesn't mean that it will be their biggest focal point. Based on everything that they were saying in their conversation, I think their focal point is still going to be EDH, and the ramifications of what they do to EDH will affect CEDH.
So you don't think they're going to make any special moves against proxies?
No, I don't think they will send tournament organizers cease and desist because they're doing proxies or the Pinkertons or anything like that. I mean, I could be wrong. I've been wrong about what Wizards has done in the before. I feel like they know what will help shut down interest in their game and what will get people to stop playing. It's in their best interest to avoid those decisions.
I think I agree. For me personally, from being inside of the CDH community that's very proxy friendly, I think I agree from my perspective, but I'm not sure if they do. But I agree with you.
It will help having someone in a CAG
I wonder
setting.
If the CDH person will be able to whisper, please just like don't look at the proxies, please. Like, I wonder if they'll be able to like comfortably say that. I hope so. Because that would be very helpful if we could have someone on the inside saying like, it's okay, like just don't look. It's all right that there's proxies. Just don't look. You'll still make money.
Could you imagine if Magic 30 was just like a $50 pack of cards? That
would be the dream
like,
situation.
That would have been so... Do you know how much... Maybe I don't know this. I would imagine they would have made a significant amount more if they would have just said, here's a $50 pack of like CEDH staple proxies.
Like they were able to do it. Like they printed it. They did the reserve list thing. They found a loophole. They printed the cards with different backs and they said they weren't with cards or whatever. They did it. If they just made it affordable, it would solve a lot of CDH problems, I think.
I think so too.
I wonder if they'll do that. Like, I wonder if they will help CDH tournaments and say, local game stores, here is a complimentary token pack of 30th anniversary things that you may loan out to your players so they can play the cards and then have them back. Like, that would help push the growth of CDH, which would help push the growth of Commander, which would push the growth of Magic in general. Commander is our most played format. So if you pushed the growth of the competitive aspect of things, that means maybe a future Pro Tour or the like of like CDH. So I think that would be a good thing, but I'm not a business. I don't know if that's possible, if that would be doable.
I think maybe what we do, because I don't think that there is a world where Wizards goes for that. I think they're content printing cards one at a time in each Commander set so that they can make the most amount of money possible. So I think realistically the best way to go about this is to keep the EDH to CEDH funnel alive and really just channel Wizards helping to grow EDH and use that momentum to help grow CEDH at the same time. Because the more EDH players we get and the more EDH people are playing, the more eyes get to CEDH and the more people get interest in the format that way. And then from there you can start to allow proxies because people are already entrenched. They're still going to buy the products at that point. So
I still buy so much product.
Exactly, right? So if you just keep the funnel alive, I think that's the best thing to do is for us realistically at this point.
That makes sense that the funnel is over on the casual side and they funnel over to CDH rather than putting the funnel onto CDH, because I think, yeah, you would probably attract less people into CDH because it's not super beginner friendly. It's hard.
Exactly. The net is so much bigger on the EDH side and it's so much easier to get them caught in that net. The CEDH net has a ton of holes in it and it's all patchy and it's broken in half. Like, it's a hard format to get into that way. I think the funnel system would work a little better.
That makes sense. Do you want to talk about the format, the meta, CDH, what it looks like now that the bans have been made and maybe what the future looks like?
Yeah.
I feel like we talked about everything that we can for the RC switch.
I think we can.
We should talk about the future of CDH. And this is more hypothesizing, right? But we've had 2 weeks at this point to play with new CDH.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
How are you feeling? Give it to me.
Not good, not Dylan. Good. Not good. Not good. Yeah. I'm worried that I was one of those players that relied on huge bursts of mana to win the game all of the time. And that doesn't make me feel good as a Magic player, but I think it's something I'm coming to terms with.
I think what we can do to help solve this problem is to find other huge boosts of mana. Culling Ritual. Ooh. You got to get a good Culling Ritual deck.
I need a good Culling Ritual deck because I don't think Timnathrasios is cutting it as a good deck. No.
It's not explosive enough. It can't win. You have to acquire A plus B over the course of time. Yeah. You can't win out of nowhere.
I'm 0-7 with Thrasios Timna right now.
Dump it.
I think what I'm realizing is that the meta hasn't changed that much at all. We talked about it a little bit last week, but I think it's much more apparent to me now how much, like, the decks that were already good are still good. Like, no deck that was bad gets good because of the cards were banned. They only lost stuff. They didn't gain anything.
Yeah, they just lost a little bit less. It doesn't give them that much of a huge boost.
Exactly. But it because it didn't boost them, they're not really going anywhere. Decks could only go down in power level from here, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think that's just the shift that all decks had to go
it's
in.
It's just
a little
what
bit.
Amount of bad you went down. Rog'Sai went down too bad, whereas a deck like Rocco went down 10 bad, or Atalia went down 20 bad.
So whereas like Rog'Sai, yeah, whereas like
I don't know what this scale system is 20 bad about.
This is 20 bad, yeah, but like so where Rog'Sai is already at the top and only drops down by two, like Thrasios Timna was down at like 15 to 20 and then dropped down by another 10 and is now down at like 30 or something. These aren't scientific numbers, but like that.
This is just gut reaction after playing somewhere around, because you played with some Omnath games too. So we've played only 10 to 15 games, as I would say at this point.
And I only got 3 Omnath games, which I will say was not enough of a sample size, but I still haven't seen it take a game. So again, I don't think that it's become like better just because the Jeweled Lotus problem goes away. It's still really hard or slow to get your commander out, and you're still going to have trouble up against Rog'Sai if you don't have interaction in your hand on turn one and turn two.
Yeah, I've been playing Rog'Sai. I've been enjoying it a lot. I don't know exactly what my record is right now. It's not perfect, but I have won 4 out of 8 games or 3 out of 8 games or something. So it's not like I have an incredible record with the game.
That's really
deck.
Solid, though.
But I still think Rog'Sai is great. And we don't need to talk a ton about Rog'Sai. Everyone knows Rog'Sai is really good. But the deck is just so consistently powerful. It can present turn 2 wins so easily. Turn 2 protected wins pretty commonly. It can rely on the Mystic Remora and Rhystic Study starts too really well. The new versions are playing Bolas of Citadel. I have hated Bolas of Citadel and CDH for a long time. I'm trying out because the only ones that have won post-Dockside that I have seen are playing Bolas of Citadel. I don't think that's right. There's too many situations where you can hit two lands in a row, or someone just fucking chain of vapors your Bosa Citadel and all this work that you do goes right down the shitter. That doesn't feel great to me. But Wheel of Misfortune and the sorcery speed extra turn spells, though, those have not felt great to me also. So I feel like there's some flex slots there. So I'm trying out Bosa Citadel for now. To me, and because I switched from mid-range decks to what my true heart and joy is really fast decks, the format just feels faster. Because I'm either winning on turn one, two, or three, or I haven't won after that.
That's how it's been feeling to me. It feels a lot faster because, I don't know, I've been playing slower decks and I feel like I can't get game wins in. And maybe that's because I'm playing against a lot of Rog'Sai right now, but I feel like I need to go faster. I'm looking at Rograk a lot right now. I just think being able to play blue Rograk seems like you're in a really good spot between Flare of Duplication, Flare of Denial.
Flare is so insanely good. It's ridiculous how good Flare of Duplication is.
It's been so powerful, and it really makes me want to put a Rograk deck together just because of Flare of Duplication, but also giving yourself access to Fierce Guardianship, Deflecting Spotlight super easily. I just feel
like getting turned on right away, like having all of your free stuff on right away is so powerful.
It just feels like it's in such a good spot to be in that now I kind of feel like I need to put a Rog'Sai decklist together.
Yeah,
because
honestly, I think you should. I think you should try it out. It's super fun. The decks are super sweet. There are some tricky situations. There's some hard math. Some of the Necropotence things of like, well, what are the odds that I hit things? It's tricky for sure, but it's certainly a deck that I have found that every time I lose, I say, oh, I should have done something different. I should have fetched for blue red rather than blue black, or you know, something small like that.
You can point to the decision that you made.
You can point to of like, I certainly, yeah, I should have just went for it there. There are certain times where like, I could go for a turn two, or I could go for a turn three protected win. Which do you do? In the moment, those decisions are a little bit harder. Sometimes you want to go for the turn two, but you see a whole bunch of open blue, and then you pass, and then the person right after you goes for the win, and they have it, and no one has anything. Like, those situations are a little bit tricky. To me, the metagame has gotten a little bit quicker, but for you, a little bit different.
No, I feel like it has gotten quicker, because these slow decks that I'm playing are not getting me there at all. So I feel like I need to speed up myself.
We were talking a little bit about Rograk Thrasios.
Yes.
How do you like that? Is that coming?
I did lose to Rograk Thrasios, but it was not what I was originally doing. I was originally putting a Polymorph build together. But now, again, I'm realizing that things aren't better because we have less powerful cards in the format now, because we don't have Mana Crypt and Dockside. So I shouldn't be building a strategy that still isn't good. I should be leaning into more of the creature side of things for that deck.
I think, yeah, overall, and that's a little bit, I don't know if it's,
that also
it's
doesn't,
a little sad.
It's sad because it also doesn't feel good, because the best way to win in that deck then was with like a Dockside Team or Sabertooth line, which now you also don't have access to, which is like kind of the main reason why I didn't want to do that. And I wanted to go in the Polymorph direction instead and go like, well, if the flickering creature strategy is straight up bad now,
yeah,
maybe this strategy is less bad to do, but the strategy is still bad to do. Like, here, Polymorph is still not good, I think.
I agree that I think Polymorph is overall not good. Here are my thoughts. I think Rog'Sai being the 0 points of the format is where we want to think about that. All the interaction that people are playing is probably going to be able to is to beat Rog'Sai, right? So like Mindbreak Traps and like Counter Magic and stuff like that, right? I think what something that the Rograk Holebreaker horror decks have access to in like Shifting Woodlands, being able to like kind of uncounterably get your Holebreaker horror in play.
We just lost to that the other day.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And then having your opponent's counter spells when they can, like, by the time they can counter something, what they're countering is a Sol Ring. But that's okay because you still have a Mox Diamond or a Rograk, or you can keep the shit going. So like uncounterably getting your Holebreaker horror into play. And there are some other ways to do that. You know what I mean? I think that is a good place to start because you're a little bit stronger to counter spells. I think those are the strategies that if for me right now, if I was looking like next level of the format, that's where I would want to be, like stuff like that. Does that make sense?
I like that because it also means you can save your protection for interaction after you've already started comboing. Like instead of, I have my Polymorph on the stack, but they can still counter that. Like they can't counter this interaction for you to get your copy of that.
I think Shifting Woodlands is a card that has super impressed me a lot, and I think it's going to continue to be good.
So does that mean if I do end up building Rog'Thras, do I play creatures in it though?
I think yes, but also then we're not playing Culling Ritual, which is kind of one of the starting points of this is like, do you want another big burst of mana?
I feel like I need a Culling Ritual deck. Yeah, something that will help me with
that. Does that mean Jund Rograk? We did brew a Jund Rograk deck before, didn't we?
Yo, because that lets me play Flare of Duplication and SWAT, which are the two most important ones that I wanted to play.
We had Dockside in that list, I'm sure, but we'll switch it out for some other mana.
Yeah.
What can you do with Rog Rehan? Can we find the list? Is that findable right now?
Hmm. probably.
Because something that I liked about some of the commanders that have plus one counters is it turns your Agatha's Soul Cauldron into, like, effectively a second copy of, like, a reanimate effect. Because if you exile a Razaketh from your graveyard, your right hand has plus one counters and has the ability to do it. Although, I guess technically with Agatha, you're putting a plus one counter on a creature. So any creature would have that ability to do it. So maybe that's not so particularly great.
I'm not listening to what you're saying because I'm trying to look at this Jund anyway. Deck.
Rograkh Jund might be good, though. That might be where you want to be.
Let me see. All right. Damn. I mean, I feel like this deck is still probably pretty good. You know what else is a burst of mana? Orcish Lumberjack.
Yes.
Burst of mana.
What do you win? Is this Chain of Smog, though, right?
Yeah, it would be good. like a Chain of Smog line.
No protection, but...
Or dual caster mage stuff. Because, like, Jessica's Will also makes you a ton of mana, too. So I feel like just having a ton of red and, like, be able to dual caster seems pretty good.
The main thing you're swapping out, it's just going to be Rockside, but minus blue plus green. So you miss some of the Mystic Grimoire Rhystic Study starts. But besides that, you just get a bigger burst of mana. Maybe like you're a hair faster. Maybe you just go all in. I'm going to try to win on turn one. What, did you find the list yet? Or are you still looking?
I'm literally looking at the list right now.
Does it look good or bad?
Dude, we will get to add. This is all before the newest Modern Horizons set too. So we get to add Necro Dominance to this deck.
Let's do this right now. Let's do this right now.
Okay. Remove Dockside Extortionist.
Mana Crypt Gun.
Oh, the best part was that this deck already wasn't playing Jeweled Lotus too. So we get to play Necro Dominance. The only thing is that we don't have blue, so I have Final Fortune.
You kind of have to do that with the Necro stuff.
Yeah, that's really the only thing that I can do with the Necro stuff.
I still think that's fine. We're playing Beseech the Mirror?
Is that in sorcery?
Yep.
No, we're not.
Should we?
What do we want to put on the stack with that?
What do you mean, like sacrifice an artifact?
Oh, just good stuff?
Yeah.
Beseech? Yeah, let's get Beseech in here. Beseech the Mirror.
Reign of Filth is a card that I've been trying in Rockside.
We should get Reign of Filth back.
If you're going to go fast, it's just a second Rite of Flame if you're winning on turn two that fills your Underworld Breach two extra cards in the yard.
Okay, well, I think that's good. 101 cards right now.
Any of the big doofy creatures? Any little silly creatures we could cut?
Any little silly creatures we can cut? I don't know. I kind of like all of our creatures. We have both of the Spirit Guides. We have Docent of the Falling Leaf.
You put Flare of Duplication in?
No. Oh, shit. Yeah, Flare of Duplication has to pop in here. We have two cuts to make then all of a sudden. We're playing Birds of Paradise, Ignoble Hierarch, and Deathrite Shaman as our mana dorks. I guess also Orcish Lumberjack and Ragavan count as mana dorks too.
How many lands?
Oh, there's two Reign of Filths in the deck right now.
Oh, we already had Reign of Filth. Hell yeah.
Okay, remove one. All right, so now we only need to make one cut, and we're at 24 lands.
That's pretty much as low as you can get.
That's as low as I feel comfortable getting right now.
Are we on Bolas's Citadel?
No, we're not on Bolas's Citadel. Okay, here. We're going to have to make a couple other cuts because are we going to do the whole Bolas's Citadel in Tomb and Goblin Welder thing too?
That's what the other Turbo lists are doing right now. I still don't agree with it.
A deck that's in better colors is doing that in its Rograkh deck. I feel like we should be
too. I think you should try it, yeah. I'm also playing some, there's like some other, like Grinding Station. Are we already on Grinding Station though?
We're definitely on Grinding Station because we have to be to make Underworld Breach lines work in this deck.
I was also playing a copy of Chromatic Star as a way to just like draw through the top with Bolas's Citadel and just like filter your mana. It's more important in Rockside because the double blue can be a little bit tricky because your rituals don't make that.
You know what? We're playing Mana Morphos in this deck.
Fuck yeah.
So
that's awesome.
That's fucking sick.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's four cuts we have to make. But
I see?
Yeah, but I kind of really like this deck.
It's unfortunate that you probably need to play Docent for what you're doing.
Well, it's also playing...
Unearth? No more Dockside.
Oh, Unearth is in the list? Yeah, we can get Unearth out. Although we are playing in Tomb now.
Yeah, but what creatures are you in Tomb?
I guess just your...
Like Goblin Welder?
Or
Witherbloom.
Witherbloom Apprentice, yeah, as your one half of the two-card combo. But like, all right, cut it. Because like, it just being able to get Dockside back and like ritualing
can we
you
cut Wheel of Misfortune? Wheel of Misfortune?
Oh, I almost feel like Wheel of Misfortune is still good in this because I'm not in blue. Like, I can't play Windfall. I need to play...
But we did put Beseech the Mirror in, which is basically another gas item.
That could be a wheel if I need it to be, I guess. Yeah.
An actual wheel.
Cut it. All right. Wheel of Misfortune can cut.
I just cut it from mine. I don't know if that's right. I just hate that card. What else do we cut?
Two more cards. Is it one of the mana dorks? I like Ragavan. I like Orcish Lumberjack. We're not cutting Orcish Lumberjack.
It might be Guild Artisan. If we're going for a little bit faster, because Guild Artisan only really, it gets good on turn three. I think it's Guild Artisan.
Is Guild Artisan worse than a two mana rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's situational. Got it.
I think maybe it's situational, yeah. Maybe Assassin's Trophy. No, you don't have any bounce spells. You kind of need something.
I need Trophy, yeah.
Oh, Mold Duplication should go in, right? It's not in?
Oh, yeah. You can cut Heat Shimmer then.
Cut Heat Shimmer. What else? Docin is the only thing coming to mind, or one of the Mana Dorks. I'll let you make the final cut, though.
Is Docin better than Conqueror's Flail?
I think Conqueror's Flail is better because it only protects you. It doesn't protect your opponents, and colorless mana is easier.
Yeah, great point. All right, I think I'm going to cut
Docin.
How much
protection do you really need? Just win on turn one.
Protection's not good when it's three mana.
Yeah. I think this deck is good. I think this is what you should do.
I think I'm going to give this a try.
Maybe compare it to Rog'Sai and make a couple other adjustments based on that or something, but I think this is where we should start for you.
I feel a lot better about this already than I did the Polymorph build. But I also feel like my confidence right now in my ideas is just like fucking shot right now. But I like this. I do want to build something fast. I wanted a Rograk deck. It's not a blue Rograk deck, but it's a Rograk deck. I'm gonna try jamming this.
You're going back into this. I love it. Cool.
That sounds good. And maybe when we brew a deck on next week's podcast, if I end up hating this deck.
We'll brew a new one.
I'll brew a new one. All right.
On that note, thanks for listening or watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Funko K, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Bolden Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Go to 9, Quaje Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you so much, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Connor Williams, Roy Turner, Orjan, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mulcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Is that all?
That's all good.
And this week we're talking about...
What the fuck is happening in CDH.
What the fuck is happening in CDH. All right, we're just going to wing it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply in-app only.